So my biggest fear is there's going to be snakes in the toilet.
We're all afraid of that one strange thing. I'm Larry Mullins, the host of a new short 10-minute podcast called Your Weirdest Fears. We unpack where these fears come from.
A rat climbed into my toilet.
And learn how to manage them. Listen and subscribe to Your Weirdest Fears on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The listening you love is on the free Odyssey app. Your trusted local radio stations, coverage of your favorite teams, live news from your hometown, and millions of podcasts on demand. Best of all, you can completely customize your listening experience. Follow topics you care about, like leagues and teams. Pause or rewind your local sports and news, and add shows to your queue to catch up later. There's a lot to listen to, so get started and download the free Odyssey app today.
Zach Gelb here with you on CBS Sports Radio, in for Maggie and Perloff. Let's head out to the guest line right now. Welcome in a Super Bowl champion, a Pro Bowl linebacker, played for the Seahawks and the Raiders, and that, of course, is KJ Wright, kind enough to spend a few minutes with us right now on CBS Sports Radio. KJ, appreciate the time as always. How you been?
No doubt. Been good, man. How you guys doing?
Well, I'm doing fantastic. So you were in that Raiders locker room last year. When you see the news the other day that they're benching Derek Carr, and we all know it's inevitable that this offseason they're going to split, just how did you process that yesterday?
I was heartbroken for him. Just in the year that we spent together, I've grown to love the man, built a relationship with him. Awesome teammate, awesome family man. As we all know, though, this is a multi-billion-dollar business, and it's all about results. It's all about winning. And Derek Carr, you just look at his whole career. He hasn't quite done nearly enough to what a lot of people expected of him being that Raiders quarterback. So I definitely feel for him, man, but they had to make that decision, man. The offseason they put together, bringing in Devontae Adams, bringing in Josh McDaniels, just building this franchise to get to the playoffs and actually make some noise. The results that we've seen from Derek Carr is nearly, you know, it's not close to what they expect to come into this season.
I get why they're going to move on, but I just don't know what they're going to do next. And with what we've seen from McDaniels this year, it's kind of tough for me to trust that they're going to be able to bring in the next guy and get it right this time around.
Yeah, because you look at it like, what do? They trade them? Do they cut them? You got a draft that's coming up with some phenomenal quarterbacks. What do you do? And so I'm not sure what his trade value is going to be, but I know that with Josh McDaniels, he's clearly not the guy. You know, Derek Carr, the relationship is over with. So I'm looking over there in San Francisco by a guy by the name of Jimmy Garoppolo, who could potentially come in. You make a trade for him. He comes in. You're familiar with the style of offense. Still in his prime. You potentially pair him with Josh McDaniels. They really make some noise. So where Derek Carr ends up, I don't know, but I do believe they're going to have to wait till after the draft with all these quarterbacks come off the board.
Yeah, it would not be surprising to me if they go out there and they get Jimmy G, especially with the relationship he has with Josh McDaniels. I'm just wondering, since you were in that locker room last year, and we know things that you couldn't even imagine did go on, unfortunately, with the Raiders franchise, but you guys found a way to get to the playoffs. Like, how stunning is it that a year later, this team is in as bad as the spot that they're in right now?
I mean, it only makes sense because I was there last year and we made the playoffs and KJ Wright all of a sudden leaves and it's another disaster. So that's a big part of it. But I just honestly, I look at Mark Davis and I look at what was he thinking when he did not hire Rich Bisaccia. Like, he was the guy that all the players loved. He was the guy that had all the drama. We got 10 wins, made the playoffs, and we looked really dang good. And so I'm looking at him and like, man, what are you going to do going forward with this team? Because you know, did phenomenal when I was there last year, got 10 wins, and you have a decent roster. You have guys in that building that can win ball games. If you do not bring the right quarterback in, if you do not draft properly, it can continue being a mess over there in Vegas.
If Rich Bisaccia was still there, what do you think this team would have done this year?
They would have been phenomenal. They would have been really good. They bought into his style. He held guys accountable. When Derek Carr played bad, he put it on the board like, hey, this is what you're doing. I need you to do way better in this aspect. He came into the offensive meeting rooms. He's in the special teams meeting rooms. That team would have still been great, but, you know, we can't cry over spilled milk. Josh McDaniels is there, and it's been a complete disaster so far. And so I do believe that McDaniels is going to be there next year. He just got to get his guy in at quarterback to to make this thing look good.
I'm sure you still know some guys in that locker room that you probably still talk to. Just what has been their view on this entire season and how Josh McDaniels has done?
Because I'll talk to my guys during training camp, and you know how it is with the Patriots way during training camp. They were tackling full speed. Practices were all day, two-a-days, it felt like. And so it was definitely a culture shock when he came in there. And so I'm just talking to the guys over the year. It's been frustrating. It's just to see what they put together, the expectations that they had, and the results that they're giving. It's heartbreaking to see, you know, what they put together. And so I'm real close with Josh Jacobs, and you know, seeing how he's had a phenomenal year, but the results haven't shown. And so we'll see if he's there next year as well. And so it's a lot of holes to fill in that Raiders team.
KJ Wright here with us. It's kind of crazy how that division played out. Like Kansas City, people thought they were going to fall off a little bit. They've been as dominant as they've been. The Chargers now going to the postseason. The Raiders we're talking about has been a disaster. But we all know you know Russell Wilson pretty well for your time in Seattle. What has been your view on this season for the Broncos as year number one for Russ out there in Denver has just been a disaster?
I know, man. And just looking at it throughout the season, I was looking at Russell play. I'm like, oh, Nathaniel Hackett has no idea what he's doing with Russ. He's the reason why he's got to go. But as I watch Russ throughout the year, I'm like, it's Russ that's just playing bad. It's Russ not going through his progressions. It's Russ not able to complete a ball 40 yards downfield. It's Russ's energy. And I played with a guy like I witnessed a Hall of Fame quarterback. I saw his passion jump off the tape every time we stepped in to play. Russell Wilson was ready to go. And I just simply didn't recognize this guy this year. And so I do believe that he has to look himself in the mirror and he has to get back to the drawing board. And so it was a complete disaster. I'm interested to see who they bring in as a head coach because he has got to find a way to get Russell Wilson back on track.
Is the ego, though, of Russell Wilson now too big for him to honestly look himself in the mirror and realize what he needs to change?
Russell needs a really good friend right now. Russell needs his agent, to be honest with him. Russ needs a head coach to put that ego to the side. Hey, Russ, we know what you're good at. You know what you're good at. If your ego is, I want to drop back and throw the ball 50 times a game from the pocket, that it will be another disastrous season. So he needs to remove his ego. Ego is the enemy. And so he needs people in his camp to be honest with him, to be brutally honest with him, to say, hey, let's get a really great head coach or a really good play caller to do what you do best.
It also is pretty damaging when you look back at the entire thing and pretty telling now where Russ wanted to leave Seattle. And it's not like Pete, who was his most loyal supporter for years, really put up that much of a fight. It's like Pete almost saw some signs that Russ was about to decline.
Yep, and I believe Coach Carroll also saw that Russ wanted to have his own philosophy. Russ wanted to have things his way, and Coach Carroll was like, no, 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 we're going to do it this way. We've always ran the ball here in Seattle. We always use a play-action game. That's what you are great at. Hey, Russell, we're not going to run this hurry-up offense that you are presenting to the team. We're not going to go shotgun 70% of the time. We're going to do things this way. And Coach Carroll had to get his team back. Coach Carroll had to get control of that locker room. And I do believe that he saw, you know, throughout practices, especially with his injury that he had last year, maybe it is time for us to separate and rebuild this team. And so to get two first-round draft picks, two second-round draft picks, and, you know, could potentially draft your quarterback of the future is one of the biggest steals in NFL history that we're seeing right now.
Also, and you played on those defenses, and we've talked about the dynamics in those locker rooms before, especially with Russ when he was with the Seahawks. It seems like the former Legion of Boom and some of those guys on the defensive side of the ball a little extra happy to see the way that this year played out. Is that fair to say?
I wouldn't say happy. I think we would say that I think it just gave us further confirmation like, hey, we were the reason why all this success was happening in Seattle. And it's just so unfortunate that we let that you know, divide our team, especially the biggest thing was the NFC Championship game. When Russ threw all those interceptions and the defense, we held it down and we found a way to win. And then Russ threw the game with a touchdown. A lot of people were just upset over who got the credit. I was like, who the hell cares? We're going back to the Super Bowl. But it's just little stuff that divided our team, media attention, favoritism from Coach Carroll, just all this unnecessary drama that surfaced throughout this time. So no one's happy that he's struggling, but it did give some guys confirmation, like, we are the reason why that era was so special.
You guys had such a great team And I know, and we've talked about this before, once the interception happened at the goal line and Marshawn didn't get the ball, that was it for the Seattle Seahawks as we knew it. So maybe it's more than that, but why weren't you guys all able to get on the same page after how that Super Bowl and how that final year, really where the Seahawks that we knew them were at, get back to that form, just wondering.
Yeah, we essentially couldn't trust each other anymore. We thought there was some hidden agenda. That someone wants Russ to be the MVP. You just shattered our dreams to be called back-to-back Super Bowl champion. And so this relationship we have, this cool, Legion of Boom, Marshawn, all this stuff, this is over. Like, we can't even look at each other the same way. And so it was just a dark, gray, rainy cloud hovering over that building for several years. And they had to essentially wash guys out. Like, there's so much bad energy in this building. You got to go. You got to go. You got to go to get this thing back to where we want it to be. And so we couldn't. There was no overcoming that. We were still talented. We still had guys in the building. But mentally and, emotionally, we were not connected.
KJ right here with us. Did you see the gift that the Amazon Prime crew got Richard Sherman, by the way?
That was hilarious. Uncle Sherm has that sitting right next to his mantle in his bedroom right now. That was a good one.
I would love to see an honest conversation between Russ and Richard Sherman, because it seems like there's a lot of unfinished business between those two.
Yep, and then I see those guys. I saw Sherm when he went to Denver for the Thursday night game. You see them talking, but hey, guys.
KJ, let's be real. I thought that was a bad look for Richard Sherman. We know he's not all buddy-buddy and friendly-friendly with Russ anymore.
I said the same thing. I'm like, really, Sherm? You ever having a kumbaya conversation? No, sir. I tell you, one day I'm going to get all the fellas in a room, and we are going to lay it out on the line. We're going to tell our own story, and we're going to just lay it out all on the table. It's coming. It's coming soon.
Well, would Russ accept that invitation?
If anybody can convince him, I think I can get him to sit down with us.
Okay.
It'll be like when we're all retired and done, so it'll take some time, but I believe he'll do it.
Wrapping up with KJ. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and I'll facilitate it properly to where we're going to be honest, but it ain't going to be no bashing and all this stuff. I'll facilitate it properly to where we're all having a very transparent and honest, hard conversation.
Hey, by the way, I was listening to your radio show. This was 2 weeks ago. What was up with Sherm going after Mike Salk during that interview?
I know. I brought Sherm. I said, hey, Sherm, I know you're not cool with the guy, but just do me a solid. Do this for your guy. Okay, I love you. I can't make any promises, but I'll come on the show. And we was moving and grooving. We was talking. Brock Curiel was talking. Myself was talking. But as soon as Mike Salk jumped on, it was all downhill from there. So it was good for radio, as they said, but it was hard for me to have my guy come on there and at the end like that.
Well, yeah, that was the thing, because, I know Richard Sherman's a great get by you guys, obviously, but it's Mike's show. Like, what did Richard expect? Him not to talk on his own show?
And you cannot dismiss a man from his own show.
Yeah.
So they was going back and forth. I tried to stop and intervene. It was just a complete disaster. I just know now, do not bring Sherm on your radio show with 710.
Or maybe you keep on doing it, but you tell Sherm to actually talk to Mike Salk, maybe. That would be good radio. Hey,
yeah.
Before we let you run, KJ Wright, Jets and the Seahawks, where's the confidence? Because early on in the year, you were telling me Seattle's going to be better than what people thought. Where's your confidence that Seattle's going to get the job done this weekend against the Jets at?
Before the season, I predicted my Seahawks to win 9 games. Here we are at 7. And we're facing a Jets team who is also desperate. They're getting a quarterback, Mike White, back. They have a really good defense over there. They have a decent run game. We haven't been able to stop the run in the month of November or December. I'm a little nervous. It's a team that wants it bad. It's coming in. Our offense has been struggling. The writing on the wall is saying it's going to be a really tough matchup. And so we'll see. It's going to be a hard-fought game. I know that Jets team is going to want to get back rolling with Mike White coming back, being their quarterback.
I know that you want to see the Jets lose this weekend, but that defense with Sauce Gardner and Quinton Williams, man, they're fun to watch.
I know. And DJ Reed is coming back, my former teammate in Seattle. He's coming back for a revenge game. CJ Mosley made the Pro Bowl. They have some guys over there, and so it's going to be a hard-fought battle. Geno hasn't looked how he did earlier in the season. Made the Pro Bowl, but it's been a struggle lately. And so it's going to be a battle. And we haven't necessarily played great at home. And so we'll see how it all unfolds.
If you were the general manager, if you were John Schneider, right, if you were Pete Carroll, you're the brain trust of the Seattle Seahawks, are you bringing back Geno Smith next year?
Yeah, I'm waiting to the draft. If I can get my quarterback, we'll see if they get their quarterback. If they don't get their quarterback, absolutely. Geno has played well enough to earn himself a contract, but I do believe if they could find their guy, they won't reach in the draft. If they could find their guy in the draft, I do believe that they'll take him. But Geno, for sure, he's put together a solid season enough to come back.
Well, KJ Wright, always do appreciate the time. You and the family be well, and have a good start to your 2023, okay?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Throughout the 60s and 70s, cops hunted down key figures of the Dixie Mafia, including its enigmatic ringleader, Kirksey Nix.
I'm interested in making money. I'm not interested in hurting people.
15 years into Kirksey's life sentence, the Dixie Mafia was practically folklore, but that would soon change. I'm Jed Lipinski. This is Gone South, a documentary podcast from C13 Originals, a Cadence 13 studio. Season 2, The Dixie Mafia. Available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So my biggest fear is there's going to be snakes in the toilet.
We're all afraid of that one strange thing. I'm Larry Mullins, the host of a new short 10-minute podcast called Your Weirdest Fears. We unpack where these fears come from.
A rat climbed into my toilet.
And learn how to manage them. Listen and subscribe to Your Weirdest Fears on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Throughout the 60s and 70s, cops hunted down key figures of the Dixie Mafia, including its enigmatic ringleader, Kirksey Nix.
I'm interested in making money. I'm not interested in hurting people.
15 years into Kirksey's life sentence, the Dixie Mafia was practically folklore, but that would soon change. I'm Jed Lipinski. This is Gone South, a documentary podcast from C13 Originals, a Cadence 13 studio. Season 2, The Dixie Mafia. Available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Zach Gelb here with you on CBS Sports Radio. So we know Derek Carr is getting shown the door in Las Vegas. He's already left the building. Derek has left the building, everybody. As he is still on the team, but he's not going to be a part of the team, as they're saying they have mutually agreed that Derek does not need to be there because the car has been parked on the bench. Okay. What you want to believe of that, that is fine. We know Derek Carr still wants to play. The Raiders don't want him to play because of the financial component of this, where if he does get hurt and he can't pass a physical 3 days after the Super Bowl, then they're going to owe him $40-plus million guaranteed. And if we're just being honest about the situation, like KJ Wright was, yeah, you could feel heartbroken for Derek Carr because there's nothing more that he wanted to be than to be the guy for the Las Vegas Raiders. But when you see all the moves that they've made this offseason, and yes, you could be extremely critical of bringing in Josh McDaniels and saying that was a stupid move, but they still had a lot of talent on that roster, and the quarterback, it wasn't as if he was performing well in spite of Josh McDaniels. Now, I know both of them kind of work hand in hand, but he did not do enough well from what he could control to make you say, okay, this is a guy that we need to see again with the Las Vegas Raiders. Now, you could also argue that Josh McDaniels, you don't need to see anything more out of him as the head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders, and he should be shown the door. But once again, finances are involved here, and Mark Davis is not someone that is bleeding cash like a lot of these other owners, where he could afford to sign a new coach and then all of a sudden just get rid of that coach like it was nothing. So you see that financial component. That's a major reason why Josh McDaniels is going to get another opportunity. But the big move that the Raiders made this offseason, where you know the guy's going to be good, is that they did went out there and they traded for Devontae Adams, as it's all well documented. Now, a lot of people think, and it's maybe just the easy thing to say in the last 24 hours, well, Derek Carr and Devontae Adams so close, teammates together at Fresno State, even Devontae Adams voices displeasure with what happened yesterday and said he's the reason why I'm here. And Derek Carr, Devontae Adams, when he got traded to the Raiders, he was talking about how he was a little bit tired about in Green Bay, where there was a lot of uncertainty and ambiguity surrounding the quarterback position just because the status was really week to week of how Aaron Rodgers wants to go about the rest of his career. Even though we know Rodgers is a heck of a quarterback, there was a lot of uncertainty if he was going to be the quarterback of the Green Bay Packers. And the Packers were kind of held in a situation where You couldn't really take care of Devontae Adams because you didn't know what was going to happen with Aaron Rodgers. Then they eventually get the deal done with Aaron Rodgers, and Devontae Adams is like, oh, I don't want to be second fiddle here. I got put in the back burner for too long, so I'm going to leave now money actually on the table where I could have got more money in Green Bay, and I'm going to go to Las Vegas, be closer to home. Not only that, I'll still get paid handsomely. And, oh yeah, by the way, I don't have to deal with the quarterback situation being year to year. And through all that, here we are once again, where Devontae Adams is in a spot, but now we know the quarterback situation is once again year to year, where all we know for sure is that Devontae Adams is not going to have Derek Carr in Las Vegas next year. And is it going to be Jimmy G? Is it going to be Baker Mayfield? Is it going to be Tom Brady? I don't think they're going to trade for Aaron Rodgers. Is it through the draft? So it's a major question mark on who's going to be the Raiders quarterback next year. So some people have suggested, well, if Carr's leaving, maybe Devontae Adams is going to force a trade. One problem with that. For a wide receiver, the dead cap next year for Devontae Adams, if he is not on the Raiders roster, the Raiders will still have to have $31.4 million in dead cap space allocated towards Devontae Adams. So let me just translate this for you. Even if Devontae Adams went to Mark Davis, or Devontae Adams went to David Ziegler or Josh McDaniels, whoever, and said, I want out. I do not want to be a part of the organization. I think the organization is going to tell him tough luck. I don't think they are going to look at the dead cap space and say, okay, it benefits us to trade Devontae Adams regardless of what you're going to get back. So Devontae Adams will be with the Las Vegas Raiders next year. How happy he will be, that I don't know, will be kind of dependent on who they go on out and go get to be the quarterback of the Raiders for not only next year, but for the foreseeable future. Now, I will say, because this is not a great free agency class for wide receivers, but as we've seen throughout the years, it doesn't have to be a great free agency class for moves to happen in the NFL. Just in the last few years, we've seen Stephon Diggs traded. We've seen Tyreek Hill traded. We have seen A.J. Brown traded. DeAndre Hopkins have been traded. You go to DeAndre Hopkins, I do think he's in his final two games as a member of an Arizona Cardinal, you know, being with the Cardinals. Because you look at the Cardinals, I hope everything's okay from a health standpoint with Steve Keim. It is tough, other than just saying that both those guys got extensions, with what they have failed to do so far recently with the Cardinals, to make an argument that they're going to be able to turn around. I think Keim and Kingsbury, I wasn't sold on this a few weeks ago, I looked at the contract. I said, okay, they both just got extended through 2027. There's a lot of excuses there with Kyler Murray now being out for the year, DeAndre Hopkins missing the first six because of the performance-enhancing drug situation. I thought there was enough excuses for Michael Bidwell to say, okay, I'm just going to hold my nose and rely that Cliff Kingsbury and Steve Keim are going to be back. I'm starting to believe, and this is just a gut instinct. This is no sources, no inside information. But I'm starting to believe that it's more likely than unlikely that Steve Keim and Cliff Kingsbury are done with the Arizona Cardinals after this season. So if that's the case, and let's just entertain this thought, you're bringing in a new GM, you're bringing in a new coach, even if you're not, Kyler Murray's not going to be starting for the majority of the season next year. We don't even know how many games Kyler Murray's going to be starting next year because of how late into the season he did tear up his leg with the ACL injury. So maybe you get him back halfway through with 2 years left in that DeAndre Hopkins contract. Why would it behoove you to bring DeAndre Hopkins back when this team, even though DeAndre Hopkins is still a great player, they're nowhere close to winning football games and winning football games at a level to get you back to the playoffs. And I know this team was just in the playoffs a year ago, but there wasn't really a sustained view that this was going to be sustained success with the Arizona Cardinals. And they brought in a lot of older players. I know Chandler Jones is no longer there, but he was there for a few years. J.J. Watt is on the verge of retiring. Zach Ertz is getting up there in age, and now unfortunately he's out for the year with the injury. A.J. Green is a receiver there. Like, they're an older football team now. So when I look at the Cardinals, if you're in this spot where you have all this money committed to Kyler Murray, we still don't know if Kyler Murray is the guy. I don't know if Kyler Murray has the ceiling of being a great quarterback, but you're paying him like a great quarterback. I've only really seen things to show me that he's only going to be a really good quarterback, not a great quarterback. But you've made the investment in your quarterback, assuming whether you reset on the coach or GM or not, and I do think that they will. I think either way, it makes a lot of sense to get rid of DeAndre Hopkins because you need to go bring in younger talent. And I don't know what DeAndre Hopkins would get in return in a trade, but you got to think it's some pretty significant draft capital. I'm sure there would be a team that would give up a first-round pick for DeAndre Hopkins, even though he's 31 now, but he's got 2 years left on that contract at a price tag that isn't crazy. His base salary next year is $19 million. The year after that, it's $14 million. So you could restructure it if you want to maybe tack on a few years, and you could even spread that out more, but it's not even something necessary that you got to do. And Hopkins is still showing he could play at a pretty high elite level, even without the drugs, you know, when he's come back. So if you're DeAndre Hopkins, why would you want to stay in Arizona? And if you're the Cardinals, even though we know how great of a player DeAndre Hopkins is, you're bringing him back for what? Because next year, with 2 years left on his contract, is a lost year. You don't even know when you're going to get Kyler Murray back. So why are you then bringing him back for next year from what? That at the end of 2023 or for the start of 2024, when he's in the final year of his contract, you get to team up with Kyler Murray again? I would look elsewhere, even though Hopkins is a tremendous wide receiver. I would try to get some big draft capital back because the chances or the odds that DeAndre Hopkins ever wins anything of significance with the Cardinals are slim. Or the odds of him just getting back to the playoffs with the Cardinals. Because you would think after 2024, I know they could franchise tag him, but like, why would he want to stay? On his own accord, why would he want to stay? So you're looking at a player that if you keep him, he's just going to be there for the final 2 years in Arizona, and then he'll go somewhere else. So I think you strike right now when, I guess you could say, the iron's hot, where all the signs are pointing that this team is in a little bit of a rebuild, and they got to retool, and they got to reconfigure. So not that you're going to get maybe, you know, as many picks as like what the Panthers got for Christian McCaffrey, but look at that deal now. McCaffrey went to the 49ers. He could be a major part in a team that wins a Super Bowl this year. And the Panthers were able to get back significant resources, like multiple draft picks. And it was a win-win trade. I think there could be a win-win trade for the Cardinals this offseason where you're giving a team that needs a number one wide receiver a number one wide receiver, but in return, you're getting back favorable, rich draft capital. So I do believe that Davante Adams this offseason won't be traded, but DeAndre Hopkins will be traded. It makes a lot of sense if you're the Cardinals to trade DeAndre Hopkins. Zach Yelp here with you on CBS Sports Radio. We'll take a break. Joe Theismann going to join us coming up at 5 p.m. Eastern. On the other side, there is really nothing to be excited about with this game coming up tonight between Dallas and Tennessee. But we'll spend a few minutes on it. Zach Gelb here with you on CBS Sports Radio. Joe Theismann going to join us coming up 20 minutes from now. But look who just crashed the studio. It's my producer extraordinaire, Hot Take Hickey. And the reason why I'm allowing you to crash the studio right now is usually you're able to find a positive kind of outlook or create a positive outlook when there's really no positive outlook to be had. You're a man of positivity, sometimes stupidity, but really, positivity is the way that you like to phrase it.
Natural optimist more than stupid, but
yeah, but sometimes your optimism makes you stupid. We've just seen that with some of the teams you root for and the belief and how you try to have this optimism and then it comes crashing and burning down just all on you. But I need you to try to give me a little optimism here.
Okay, glass half full approach on what?
The game tonight.
Oh,
this is a brutal game. You know, I wrote here, I will talk at 4:40 about the game tonight. No Tony Pollard, no Derrick Henry. Malik Willis isn't even going to start. They benched him for Joshua Dobbs, who was on the Lions practice squad 8 or 9 days ago. And this game means nothing for Tennessee because they're in a win-and-you're-in game next weekend against Jacksonville, so it doesn't really even make sense to play your guys. And for the Cowboys, I know you're still alive technically for the division, but you're not going to win the division. Philadelphia is still going to win that division and in all likelihood get the number one overall seed in the NFC. So like, I'm sitting here and I'm trying to think what's a positive to watch this game. I can't even give you a good betting outlook on it because the spread's 14 points. Neither of these teams are really playing their guys, so it's like I'm going to lay the 14 with the Cowboys. Maybe the under is the best play in this game. So try to spin this how when the show ends tonight, and now I'm not hosting my show tonight at 6 to 10 p.m. Eastern, and I'm going to watch the game because that's what we do. But why should I actually watch this game? What is the intrigue to watch this game?
You came to the right source. I have a reason to watch the entire game, mind you, not just like for the first drive or two.
And by the way, all my fantasy teams, I know nobody cares about my fantasy teams, are eliminated, so I don't even have any of that gain in it.
Okay, so there's literally no reason to watch, but there is one reason.
Under 40.5 points?
Yes.
Right? You kind of think that.
Yes. I don't think there's going
to
be a lot
of... This is
going
to be, run the clock, let's get to next week. That's
maybe
what this is going to be.
Skip halftime and just kind of really breeze through this one.
All right, but give me your positive outlook.
This is the final chance, and really the only chance, Al Michaels unhinged. This is a game, last game of the season, I believe, for Amazon. They don't have any playoff games, so there's no Thursday night game next
Great
week.
Great call.
He's on... I don't know this for, like, I'm assuming he's able to curse. He just doesn't. But, like, if you actually really wanted to, is he going to get fined by the FCC? Because it's, like, streaming. I don't know. But if you wanted to curse during a broadcast, if you're Al Michaels, he won't. But,
like, you know how
this
Mad
would
Dog
be
Russo,
the day to do so.
Mad Dog Russo has been at Sirius now for, like, almost 20 years. He doesn't curse, even though you're allowed to curse on Sirius, because he has that old kind of traditional way. Al Michaels being, like, the king of traditional broadcaster and an absolute legend. He's not going to be cursing up a storm.
All right, so maybe he won't drop any F-bombs, but I think
he'll be talking about the gambling angles a lot.
He will be, I think, like, I enjoy, like, when broadcasters complain about the game and how boring it is, how they want to get out of there. I think we'll get a lot of that tonight. Like, remember, if you go back to, unfortunately, I remember this very well, Colts Broncos week 5 it was. It was like, 12-9?
That was tough in the eyes.
In overtime with, I think it was all field goals, I believe, at least from the Colts, all field goals. That
Broncos
was one
won
where,
that game, right?
Colts won that game.
Oh, the Colts won that
Colts
game.
Won that game. But that was a game where Al Michaels couldn't get out of there fast enough. And they were laughing at the Broncos fans leaving. I think they were laughing in part because they're like, man, I'd love to be with them and just get out of the stadium and leave this game.
Go hit up one of those dispensaries or something like
that. That could be this game where he's just like, just doesn't even try to hide that he could care less.
Yeah, this is a rough one.
Other than that, I don't know what's the reason to watch, because otherwise it's actually pointless.
I kind of give you like a 9.8 out of that. That was very creative.
Al Michaels.
You did
let
a decent job. All right. We've had 24 hours now, pretty much, since we know that Derek Carr is not going to be back with the Raiders next year. Two things on this. Was this the Raiders going to him, telling him he got benched, and they gave him the option first that you could leave the team? Or is this him crying and saying, I want to leave, and the Raiders just go, okay, we're not that they're screwing this guy over, but we're not going to go after him and fine him and suspend him for not showing up?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. Like, I like Derek Carr, and I think sometimes you're a little hard on him when it comes to him crying and showing his emotions and caring, but this one feels like a little, like, this is, honestly, it's pretty soft by Derek Carr.
Yeah, he needs to at least stay in the facility.
You have, like, you're the backup, it stinks, you got two games left, it's embarrassing, but right out of the storm.
So he has a lot of reasons why he could play the victim card, but the only reason why I had a problem with him crying after the game is it's kind of, woe is me, you know, I just care. And with Derek Carr, when I hear more about how much you care and I don't see enough positive results on the field, that's a problem for me. So that's why I get on him a little bit for the crying. It's not that I didn't think his heart was in the right place, but it comes off a little bit fake at times.
And up to this point, he's always been a team first guy. And I think, like, he projects that, but also backs it up for the most part. This is a very, like, again,
it's a soft move.
It's
a week.
He's not going to be, there's two games left. Sure, like, he's a distraction when he's there or not. So the questions aren't going away because he's at home the next 2 weeks compared to if he's a backup quarterback or inactive and just on the bench at third string.
Do you think he just didn't want to speak about this?
Oh, I didn't think about that. Potentially, right? Because I guess he's still, like,
he'd
I guess
cry again.
You would have media availability. Or they just go to your locker and ask you compared to. He may cry, actually, for that one. He would.
You know what would happen? Well, I think the media would be respectful, but maybe he would have, like, his Giovanni Bernard moment where he would refuse it at first and then make the media look like the bad people, which, by the way, the media, that was not a good look for them in that whole situation.
The witch hunt.
And I've always said this, and I've been in locker rooms. I'm not a beat reporter, so I don't rely, like, my job does not rely on these guys talking or not. But if a player says, hey, I don't want to talk, even though like they're contractually obligated to do so and they could pay a fine for not speaking to the media, I've always respected if a player said like, okay, I don't want to talk when I've been in the locker room.
I guess Derek Carr, he can always, you know, the reporters can't pull the old, we haven't had a reason to talk to you all season long. That's why I even talked to you, Derek, with the way like some of the reporters said that about Giovanni
Bernard.
You've
been injured all year. You've been injured all year.
What have you done? They can't say that to Derek Carr. That's for sure.
Alrighty. Who's starting next year? Because I have an idea for where Derek Carr is starting next year, but we've had 24 hours to let this kind of marinate. Who's the one team that rises to the cream of the crop?
For Derek Carr, I think it's the Jets. I think the Jets will make a trade for him. I think that is that's a good landing spot. Yes.
I don't think he's going to get traded because he's one of the few NFL players that has a no trade clause.
Right.
I know you could kind of control then where you go, obviously, but if I'm him, wouldn't you rather just get cut and then you could go through a natural free agency process and see how badly teams want you and all that?
Yeah. I think either way, though, cut or trade, I think still if I'm him, I have the Jets at the top of the list.
Really?
What would you say is better?
Commanders.
Especially for Derek Carr, going from one chaotic organization, I don't know about going to another one is the answer for me.
But
they have a good roster.
Sure. They have a really good roster. And I think the roster is why I would go there. Daniel Snyder, we all know, is scum. We all know Daniel Snyder should not be in the NFL as an owner. It's trending in that direction that he's leaving. Now, how ugly does this get? How much of a fight does he put up where maybe then Derek Carr has to answer for that? But the team spokesperson with the Commanders is Ron Rivera. And Ron Rivera is well respected. He has to address everything. I just think the Commanders would be a better situation where I fully get where you look at it from afar. You're like, oh my God, he was in a toxic situation with the Raiders. And now you're going with Dan Snyder. Just why would you want to put yourself in that situation? But I look at that roster for me. I think that defense is really good. Now the Jets have a phenomenal defense, we know. But offensively, with Terry McLaurin, Jahan Dotson, Antonio Gibson, and Brian Robinson Jr., that's why I would go there. And even though the NFC East has been really, really, really good, I don't know what Dallas is going to be next year. Like, Philadelphia is great this year. Are they going to take a step back next year? We know Buffalo's not going anywhere inside the AFC East.
Right, but I'd say the two divisions are comparable. I guess the one thing, the risk, and even with a new ownership, you got to think about if you're Derek Carr, is do they want you? Like, it's a new owner. Do they want Ron Rivera? Do they want, you know, Derek Carr? Do they want to make their own imprint on the roster and blow it up? I have no idea. Like, that's part of the risk of bringing a new owner in.
But I still think you're very, not that I want to say very far away, like we're years and years away, but until they kick Snyder out, find someone right to, I know he has the team up for sale now, or they're exploring it right, if you believe that or not. Until you finally find someone, you're going to at least get a season under your belt.
Well, you'll get a season, but then also you have a season under Dan Snyder's ownership, which is also not too fun either.
Yeah, but with the pieces that they have with the Commanders, I know it's tough to say that you just get, like you just push Dan Snyder aside, but in this case, I don't think Dan Snyder's a reason, when you look at this roster, that it's going to really impact Derek Carr that much. But the part why I just can't see him going to the Jets, and I hear everyone saying him with the Jets. Can you see Derek Carr handling the New York media?
Yeah, hey, I think so.
Oh, I don't. That guy does not come off to me as someone that could be in a big market like New York because he says the right things. Okay, this is our time to shine. It's boom or bust right now. But he's not been saying that for a few years. I don't know if the personality and ultimately winning cures all. But I just don't know if Derek Carr could handle New York. That's my biggest concern. Is if Carr could handle the pressure and the spotlight of New York. And I get it, the bright lights of Vegas and all of that, but that's a newer city that got a football team. And I know that he went through a ton of crap a year ago that no one should ever have to go through, but I'd be really concerned about the circus that's always just inevitably with New York, even though the Jets are in a better spot, but with Derek Carr going into that New York media environment, I don't know if he could handle it.
Well, I'll say this for Derek Carr. The good thing for him is that you're taking over a spot. Let's just assume he's with the Jets, right? You're taking over a team where their former number two overall quarterback said, I'm not the reason why we lost the game, which they lost 10-3 and had, what, 103 yards of total offense, something like that. So he's not going to do that. I promise you, next year, if they lose a game 3-0, he'll be saying, you know what, it's not my fault. I feel no remorse after how I played, which was terribly in a loss, at least he'll handle it professionally. So that he is for the, I think there's a good honeymoon period for a year or two at least, where I think he'll be on the good side for the New York media, where he'll be a competent quarterback, which something the Jets have not had in a long time. And I think he will bring him a playoff berth. But then, you know, then the question is, you know, once you get to the playoffs, it's okay, how can we do more, more, more? That's when I think it starts to get a little dicey with him not being able to get over the hump.
Would you want Derek Carr in your Colts?
No.
Because?
That's the worst case scenario for the Colts, because they're not a quarterback away. And getting Derek Carr would signal that you are a quarterback away when, in fact, they're not. It'd be the same cycle of Carson Wentz, Matt Ryan, and a younger version, yes, than Matt Ryan and Derek Carr, but same similar quarterback with the same belief of, oh, we're not that far away, when in reality, the roster right now is not ready to contend for a division, a playoff spot, or a Super Bowl with Derek Carr next year.
You're feeling yourself, by the way, today.
I'm feeling myself.
Yeah, you have like a different confidence about you, because you were hosting today for Bill Reiter. From what, 10 to 12, I believe?
Yeah, right? A little warm, you know, a little BP in before coming on here. Yesterday came in ice cold.
You have like a different aura about you today. You seem like more confident than normal.
I'll take it. Okay, that's good. There we go.
You gotta stop though with the clapping, like whenever someone gives you a compliment, like, yeah, let's go. Here we go.
Fire it up.
Because then that just ruins it all for me.
Oh, okay. So the excitement is the buzzkill.
Okay, so yesterday I was laying out the path, and I think this will surprise you.
Laying out the path for.
Yeah, I'm the biggest Carson Wentz critic there is.
Oh, no.
But with these next two opponents, the Commanders this weekend going up against the Browns, and then the Cowboys, where they really have nothing to play for, it's now or never, obviously, for Wentz, but I don't think this is as impossible as what I felt like in the other years with Carson.
And going back to the entire Derek Carr to Washington theory that you have, I'm nervous for the Commanders. As someone who went through the Carson Wentz experience, and you being a Philly, covering him in Philly, went through the same thing as well. I wonder if he, again, two bad opponents and two gimme games here, that they should make the playoffs. If just making the playoffs fools the Commanders thinking, you know, Wentz got it, figured it out, like that benching did him well, and he's going to kind of be our guy now. We're going to back him in 2023. That's the worst case scenario.
If that is the case,
that's bad.
The Commanders are dumber than what we all
are. And you may have to root against your team if you're a Commanders fan.
Nah, because you want to get into the playoffs. But next year, he literally has no dead cap. There's nothing.
Right.
You could get rid of him for no cost. I know you gave up capital to get him, but I think you wait to release him. You got to see who you end up getting. But just because this guy is the quarterback, if you make the playoffs of these final two games, you shouldn't have any confidence then over the span of a full 17-game season.
You shouldn't, but
they did in the first place.
Should and will, as you know.
I know. That would be a bad job by Ron Rivera.
Oh, boy.
You know what? I'm hoping we see Rivera at the Super Bowl this year on Radio Row as he joins us each and every year, because I got to plead to him to not bring Carson Wentz back.
The listening you love is on the free Odyssey app. Your trusted local radio stations, coverage of your favorite teams, live news from your hometown, and millions of podcasts on demand. Best of all, you can completely customize your listening experience. Follow topics you care about, like leagues and teams. Pause or rewind your local sports and news, and add shows to your queue to catch up later. There's a lot to listen to, so get started and download the free Odyssey app today.
Throughout the 60s and 70s, cops hunted down key figures of the Dixie Mafia, including its enigmatic ringleader, Kirksey Nix.
I'm interested in making money. I'm not interested in hurting people.
15 years into Kirksey's life sentence, the Dixie Mafia was practically folklore, but that would soon change. I'm Jed Lipinski. This is Gone South, a documentary podcast from C13 Originals, a Cadence 13 studio. Season 2, The Dixie Mafia. Available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
What makes your skin crawl? No matter how absurd, I want to know.
Tails without fur on them, such as rats or possums.
I'm Larry Mullins, the host of a new podcast called Your Weirdest Fears. You send me your fear.
I'm just so weirded out about the texture and how they can just move around and flop.
And then I go to the experts to learn how to overcome them. Listen and subscribe to Your Weirdest Fears on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts from.